The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game presented by Zyn Nicotine Pouches, live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the Deep. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil next couple of days. Kelly Bidlin next to me, and we have some breaking news, Kelly, to hit the top of this hour here. Something we talked about in hour number one. The thought was this could potentially happen, and it now has. Novak Djokovic, the top seed, not the favorite, but the top seed at the French Open, officially pulls out after a knee injury that was re-aggravated yesterday late night in a match against Francisco Cerúndolo. Djokovic, who, if you had opened up your odds screen this morning on the East Coast before this happened, was 6-1, the fourth favorite, but was an underdog to Casper Ruud, who was even longer than him on the odds board, in tomorrow's top quarterfinal. Djokovic is now out. He just announced that a couple minutes ago. Ruud, as a result, is through to the semifinals. And all the futures have been, if you're looking to jump on this, as we attempted to during the break, or just at least to see, Kelly, all futures now, most books have them down. Maybe a couple have already repriced these, if anything. But that's your big breaking news. Novak Djokovic, who just passed Roger Federer for the all-time Grand Slam single matches won title yesterday, he is now out.
Yeah, this is we scrambled to look and check and possibly make a bet.
Credit to the books.
If you're sitting at home right now, I'm not gonna say you still shouldn't do the same. Maybe you think there's a shot that still might have it up, but that's up to you. A lot of places have repriced. We're seeing about plus 350 on Ruud now through to the semis, so that probably makes a fair amount of sense. Interested to hear what news comes out of this with Novak, because as Drew talked about, I think there was more testing going on, at least with that knee, than I was aware of after yesterday. So that'll be interesting to see, and obviously a big-time summer coming up for him, as we talked about, with Wimbledon and the Olympics.
And Drew Dinsick, who we had on in hour number one, he made the point on Gil's pod, the Beating the Book podcast, leading into the French Open, that for guys, especially like Djokovic, who was already banged up and was struggling coming into this tournament, is it something like the Olympics, which is like the last thing on his ledger to cross off, was something, this is, you know, going to be his last chance at an Olympics, since it's every 4 years, that might take precedent were a re-aggravation to happen. And sure enough, you re-injure yourself. He also, not only that, Kelly, won back-to-back five-set matches that each took 4.5 hours or so. So it's not like he was just, you know, he was full of energy and hadn't been on the court all that long and just happened to tweak a knee. No, this was like serious on-court labor, right, that was happening over the last couple matches.
Yeah, and I think Drew's point was interesting then. It's even more interesting now of it would have, I would have, you know, first we got to see what actually came out. Maybe there was something that came out of those tests. I don't want to say it's not, you know, not something serious when we don't know. But, you know, if the rest of this field was a bunch of lower-level players, is it something he might try to effort his way through? If that's kind of the situation, yeah, I kind of think he probably would have, but we will never know that.
We never will. At least we likely will never. No, based on how tennis works as an individual sport.
It would be awesome, though, if Djokovic came out and said that. He was like, oh, right, these guys are too good. Like, right, give me a bunch of scrubs, I would have played my way through, no problem.
Yeah, that would have been quite funny for Djokovic to do that. Hey, at least for us, I mean, that's kind of why we opened the show saying, if you want to bet Casper Ruud, A, this is probably the last chance to get a good futures number on him at 7-1 this morning. B, don't bet the match price, because if there is either a in-match withdrawal or a withdrawal pre-match, well, all of a sudden that bet is voided and you won't get anything to show for potentially fading an obviously injured Djokovic. But that's the big news of the day here. Jannik Sinner, in the meantime, is serving for the match as we speak, up 2-0 on Grigor Dimitrov, looking to be the first to punch his ticket to the semifinals there on the bottom half of the draw. Carlos Alcaraz, Stefano Tsitsipas coming up later today, set for about a 2:15 p.m. Eastern first serve there at Roland Garros. That was our big news of the day. We also now, Kelly, are coming up on 48 hours until game one of the NBA Finals. Feels like we've been waiting a while. We still have 48-plus hours to go here, but the report this morning from Shams Charania, which I think you and I would both argue is not really news, was just essentially that Kristaps Porzingis of Boston is now expected to go in game one Thursday. I think anybody, regardless of random empty gym videos we saw, would have expected Porzingis to go. Now the question is, at what point, and if there is any point, do we see this game one number adjusted at all, since early money came in on Boston, bet up from 5.5 to 6.5? For people like you and I think, who are each interested in Dallas, especially game one, To me, 7 is a buy point.
That's a buy point.
Will it get there now? That, to me, is the question.
Yeah, I think you'll see it. It might be one of those that, you know, it doesn't last long, though, for whatever book puts it up. We don't often talk about key numbers in basketball, but, you know, 5 through 8, you get about 23% of games land in that range, I believe is what the number is. So you're kind of always, we never really talk about it because you don't really want to be buying points ever in the NBA. It's never worth it to be buying half points or anything like that. But if you look around for where ranges, you know, those type of ranges, you know where you kind of want to bet if you're taking a dog price or what you want to lay if you're betting the favorite. Now, we bring up 7, though, and you think about it, just possessions. We see, you know, 3 obviously so important. That's only a 1-possession game. 5 we bring up often because that's the 3 plus the free throws, yep. Right? If you miss, you're going to be fouled instead of the team. A free throw, 7's the next level beyond that. So 7, I'll probably be in lightly on the Dallas side. If it gets there, I guess I'm not convinced, Ben. You're right. We've already seen this, you know, move a point from the opener. But I think there will be people laying that with when Porzingis is officially ruled in. I guess to me, that Shams report is a little bit more newsworthy today than most, just because I was still really on the fence of like not trusting we were going to see Porzingis till we saw Porzingis. Drew brought up earlier he was factoring kind of 20 minutes a game for his series projections. I think that's probably a fair number. Again, if he does play, I mean, still haven't officially been ruled in. So assuming he does play here in game one, I think that minutes range is probably right where Drew's at. 20 minutes, I think you're still going to see them ease him into this. I know that sounds silly from how much time he's missed and how much time has been between, you know, when game one of this is going to start and when the Eastern Conference Finals ended, but it's still an injury you don't want to mess around with. And we saw how good Porzingis was for this team this year. Yeah, you want to make sure he's at least close to right once you bring him back in, for a full load.
And that's why I think the newsworthiness of this from us as bettors now is going into the player prop market, Kelly, where you go to his season-long numbers in the regular season for Porzingis, about a 30-minute-a-game guy, 20 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists. So Porzingis already for the series was set at 6.3 rebounds per game, but I'm more interested here in game one, 15.5 on the points. We have to kind of dig around here on the DraftKings menu. That's why I'm looking down here to pull this up. 6.5 on the rebounds with pretty good juice to the under. So that's where I now go to. And if you feel conviction on, all right, even if he is in now, game one feels like the best game to maybe attack this because of the unknown. And that's the more likelihood of a softer market in this case. Do you go ahead and you make that bet as things come out that he is going to play, and you at least feel like, well, he's going to see the floor, just you don't know, you've no idea how much, and you're willing to bank on, just based on historical trends and the situation here, that it'll be less than maybe some people think.
Yes, I would say if I had to bet there, it would only be unders, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, you can throw my words right back in my face, right? I really have no idea what to expect from Porzingis, right? And he's been out for so long, and you don't know how healthy he is, or how much he's still, you know, what percentage is he at? Or, I mean, maybe he's close to 100, Ben, and they just didn't feel like they needed to roll him out against Indiana, right? Maybe he was 80% then, and they're like, okay, well, we don't really need him right now. You know, let's say they were up 2-0, 3-0 in that series when they're having this discussion. Maybe he's had, you know, a week here plus, and we'll have way more than a week to have rest up between then and now. Maybe he is closer to 100%. I would still, I think it's a great point to bring up, though, because it would still be only an underlook for me.
What I would love to see, and he's not up right now on any of these, but DraftKings will post, and other books do post the head-to-head prop markets.
Yeah.
So I think the best way to look at that, because likely the juice is going to be pretty big. Ari is -125 in the under. Let's just look, you know, comb through the rebound market right now. Derek Lively, also 6.5 rebounds, but that's juiced way over. Were we to get, say, a Lively versus Porzingis head-to-head rebounding prop, I would be fascinated as to what they would do on the pricing there.
Yeah, me too.
Not out yet, but that is one I would – I'm not sure if because of the injury concerns, Kelly, they'll even price Porzingis that way, but that's the one I would want to look for that I would see a potential edge.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is we can talk the Mavericks bigs too. I mean, you always got to keep in mind they split time, so there's not necessarily – one guy that's going to get way more time than the other. However, I would expect that Lively does, especially if Porzingis goes, Lively does see a little bit more action. Gafford will still be in the starting lineup. I don't think they're going to mess around with that starting unit and how well it's done for them. So Lively, kind of one of those first guys off the bench. Think he will see more extended minutes if you know, especially if Porzingis is in there, because he's just more athletic than Gafford. He can get out and close out on some of those, you know, three-point line. That's where they're going to drag all these Dallas centers out to. They don't want to let those guys live in the paint, protect the rim like they've been doing all series. And how does Boston beat you offensively? It is with ball movement. It is with the three ball, and it's with having five guys out at that three-point line. So Lively gives you a little bit more athleticism to go cover whoever might be out there, whether that's Al Horford or Kristaps Porzingis. So I do think you'll see a little bit more of him. But with how much those guys split time, Ben, I don't know. And I know we're going to talk, the rebounds leader for the series later, where I do have a bet. I just think all those bigs, Porzingis plays a little bit further away from the basket already, plus if there's any kind of minutes restriction with him. And then with Gafford and Lively splitting time, rebounding numbers, I think I'd be looking at 6.5, like, sounds pretty right to me.
Yeah, and it's heavy juice over, too. So it's not something I would want to bet individually. That's where you look at, and Gafford is also 5.5. He's juiced over, too. That's where the matchups would become a lot more fascinating, at least to me, and more enticing as to a bet. The issue is they're not out right now, and maybe for game one, the game we want to potentially target those matchups against the Porzingis, not sure they will be because of the injury question marks. Either way, we will continue the game one discussion next. I want to get Kelly's thoughts on the total here, and we'll also talk some of these series props as far as leaders for different categories, points, rebounds, assists, where's the value at. We'll discuss that next and also hit some of this other sports betting somewhat breaking news here. The Tucapita Marcano news did just drop here within the last half hour, so we'll mention that as well since it does relate to our world of sports betting. We'll do that next here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two continues here on A Numbers Game from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. Big thanks to our crew today behind the scenes. Matt, Larry, Sean all helping out here. Kelly Bidlin is here. We will talk to Paul Spohr on Major League Baseball in 15 minutes, where we did get some baseball news that just dropped. And we're getting some more details about the specific betting patterns of Tucapita Marcano. If you weren't aware of this already, the Pittsburgh Pirates infielder was already under investigation. Major League Baseball announces today he is banned for life for betting on baseball. And it's kind of wild, I mean, Kelly. Some of the details that come out of this report: placed 387 baseball bets, including 231 on MLB, between October of 2022 and November of last year. Over $150,000. 25 of those came on Pirate games while he was on the roster. He never played in any of those games because he was injured. But what is wild is that those bets, all of the 25 bets involving the Pirates, it sounds like these are all parlay bets. They all lost. He hit 4.3% of his MLB-related bets. So, I mean, yeah.
Because you play the game, you're not getting, doesn't translate to you being a great bettor, apparently.
I remember Al Michaels in his book said that, because people would, he was like, I get asked all the time, do I bet on the games I'm calling? And he said, he wrote in his book, if I were to have bet on all the inside info I had gotten from talking to coaches and players, I would have gone bankrupt 30 years ago. You know? And so I mean, true, it's so true. Yeah. It is so true. So Tucapita Marcano. There were a few other players here who got one-year bans as well. That's going to go more under the radar. There were three minor leaguers banned for 1 year, and then one big leaguer, A's pitcher Michael Kelly, who was for betting while he was in the minor league. So he gets a year ban on that. But
yeah, lifetime ban, really, because he bet on games involving his own team. Right,
correct.
That's really where that's coming. I really wish I could sit here and say we're going to stop seeing these types of stories, but
probably not.
We've talked about it a lot. There's, you know, with the legalization and with the sports books connected with these leagues, there's a lot more of these situations that are being discovered by some of the monitoring services and brought up. So it's I know everybody. I feel like the direct line. As more and more of these stories have come out, it's these guys are betting. Like, it doesn't mean they weren't doing it before. You just have people monitoring this stuff now and actually able to track it. So, unfortunately, these stories are going to keep coming out.
No doubt. That's tough for 4.3% too. You're like, don't bet the parlays. Come on.
Yeah, says stop betting parlays.
Stop doing that too. Also,
nation, stop betting parlays.
I cannot recommend enough that the book. I think it's called "You Can't Make This Stuff Up" by Al Michaels. Great read, Kelly.
Oh, I'm sure.
Great read.
I'm sure.
It's an awesome book.
Yeah, the insider information. I always love one of Matt Brown's classic lines too, of the, because he worked in the UFC world for so long. It's not like you ever go to a UFC camp before they're warming up for a fight. You never hear a trainer say the guy's having a bad camp.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of like the horse races, right? Where it's like, oh, the horse looks great. I never hear the trainer be like, eh, he looked okay today. Eh, we don't know what to expect out of the Derby.
It's, yeah, exactly. The Michaels books, too. He's got some great Howard Cosell stories in there, which are just wild. So, yeah, I cannot recommend that enough. Anyway, back to the NBA Finals where we started the discussion on Game 1 last segment. We did not dive yet into the total here, Kelly. As much as I think most people recognize the early spread movement here from Boston minus 5.5 out to 6.5, I thought a little bit more under the radar and interesting was the total movement here, because you have a Dallas team that was number one in the NBA, final 15 games of the regular season in defensive rating, carried that over through the postseason, and Boston, who was top 2-3 in the regular season, the postseason, in all sort of defensive categories, and yet we saw money to the over here, 213.5 at open, 214.5 now market-wide. What was your interpretation of the why behind that? Because I'm trying to figure it out, honestly.
I thought this number was pretty spot on. I think you see they didn't draw much interest from me. I mean, you do have two extremely efficient offenses going right now as well. You know, if Porzingis gets back in there, well, Porzingis, though, probably a net zero, kind of what he brings offensively and defensively, maybe a little bit more offensive. Not much attraction for me. I think I always get wrapped up with the totals, and this blinds me sometimes, so I just try to avoid it. Sometimes these early games, I think you always look over later games in the series. You're looking under. It's kind of the old prize fighter metaphor, right? You're figuring stuff out early in the series, and some defenses are getting tripped up by what the offenses are throwing at them. Defenses will catch up. Pace will slow down. Later in the series, and with Luka Doncic, his usage rate being as high as it is, it's just the game's always going to move a little bit slower. So early on, Ben, I would probably be, this number I have no interest in betting in. I think unders later in the series are something I'll be looking
for. Sure, that's a good way to phrase it on that. Again, Celtics minus 6.5, 214.5 is your prevailing side in total across the market. Really no disparities there either with how heavily bet this series is going to be. As far as some of the overall series, the leaders here, whether it's points, rebounds, assists, are Jonathan Von Tobel at VSiN.com, senior NBA analyst. He's got a big write-up on the full series. Some of the prop markets to dive into. Kelly, you have made a bet here on the rebounding markets. We briefly touched on it yesterday, but it's worth revisiting here since these are kind of the markets that, with how heavily bet this stuff is in the NBA Finals, Kelly, I feel like is where you get the most value, honestly, with how the pricing can just be wildly variant across different books.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I was really diving into these on Friday and Saturday, and it just, man, the differences in odds that you were finding, you know, on the series prop markets, and you know, the lead points, lead rebounds, lead assists. There were some wildly different odds from shop to shop. So, I would still, obviously, you got to shop around with everything that you talk about. But these are, I think there is some opportunity in some of these. Jason Tatum to lead in the series in rebounds is a bet I made. I made it at minus 105. Again, it was 105 at MGM when I bet it. It's 150 at DraftKings. I think that number is a little bit more appropriately priced. Really, Ben, he's just been the most efficient rebounder and consistent rebounder of everybody in this series. Really, the only other guy I'm worried about is Luka Doncic. I really, as we kind of talked about last segment, I don't think any of these centers or any of the bigs are going to be active enough on the glass, consistent with their minutes, to really factor into this. Tatum and Doncic, with how many minutes they're going to play, how active they are in rebounding, I think it's really just those two that we're mainly talking about. And Tatum is, he's been consistent, averaging over 10 rebounds throughout the playoffs. We really see him active on the glass in these bigger games. From JVT, as you said, great article up at VSiN.com. He's grabbed 24.1% of opponent misses this postseason. That's the highest rate for the Celtics. It's also higher than where Doncic is at 21%. With how active, athletic, the matchups even that he's going to have, I think lends to this a little bit more too, Ben, where there's going to be, Bigger defenders and some bigger guys on Doncic that could slow him down, picking up some rebounds on that side of the ball. So I really like Tatum here. This is actually my biggest bet heading into the series.
Biggest bet so far. Again, that's minus up to now 150, minus 150 on Jason Tatum at DraftKings. That is one of really the two markets where it is very, very tightly priced across the board. The other one I think is worth diving into is the three-pointers leader, especially just because you've seen Luka Doncic, who's the favorite at even money, have his struggles. There have been a couple games in this postseason run where he has just not had it at all. He won for eight stretches at times in the postseason. Jason Tatum, it's been talked about so much, his general career postseason three-point struggles through his first 80 career postseason games, I was sitting at a 25% clip or so, and he's third on the odds board at 5-1. That's what makes this market kind of the most random to me of all these, where you have Derek White plus 250 as a sharpshooter for Boston. Usage is going to be the question there, and volume. And then Kyrie Irving sitting at 7-1. Four guys who you could, depending on the combination of usage and effectiveness, you could talk yourself into all four of them, I would say.
I think this one's really fascinating. I made a bet here as well. Again, shop around. I bet on Tatum here, but I found him at 9-1, which is obviously very different than 5-1. So let's go through all the Kyrie. I don't really think he's got much of a case. I don't think he's going to get up the number of shots that will compare to Luka or Tatum, right? With how many threes they'll be getting up volume wise, and he's not going to get the open looks that Derek White is. So Derek White, I'm not going to say is mispriced. The number of threes that he gets up to compared to Tatum and Doncic is going to be way lower. But the assumption is Derek White's going to have far more open looks at these threes than the other two. And if he's shooting above 40% like he has during the playoffs, I think you could make an argument for that. I think Dustin Sweetelson was in on him for this market. I think Tatum's live, though. With how many he puts up, this is one of those I just can't get out of my mind. Over the past several years, how many big-time Celtics games, big-time Celtics series, when you want Tatum to attack, be a little bit more active, and he just settles for that three ball. I've seen it so many times, and if he's putting up close to 9, 10, 11 attempts a game, like he has been during some of these big series, I'll roll the dice on that at 9-1. I think there is a chance that he comes through with that. I think if you look... like Kyrie Irving would be a complete toss out for me. Porzingis, where we're kind of unknown with him right now. I think the next guy I'd probably make an argument for is PJ Washington, right? If we kind of saw during the Thunder series, if Luke is kind of able to collapse that defense on the interior a bit, like he could be similar to the same argument for Derek White. He might get a lot of open looks out there. I'm not expecting as many, but that's where I'd probably be going is I'd probably be looking at, I think you could look, Tatum, that's what I bet, or I think you could go further down the board here.
Washington is 25-1 in that market. Still to come, we'll break down the college baseball super regionals, and up next, Major League Baseball with Paul Spohr of Fangraphs, and we come back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sound the trumpets, it's horse racing time. So saddle up for action with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when you use promo code VSINHORSE. That's all one word. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Wager on your favorite horses, then watch the races live right in the app. Download the DK Horse app right now. Back at a numbers game, final two segments for us with Kelly Bidlin. I'm Ben Wilson. We're about to go out to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in our guy Paul Spohr from Fangraphs. We were just discussing our general beverage strategies, Kelly. And I don't know. You
non-caffeine people. I just don't know how you do it.
Us non-caffeine. I don't drink caffeine. That was the big the breaking news of the last commercial break. If you have a VSiN Plus subscription and watch our commercial break.
You guys are superheroes. You're super. I always remember. I remember. Wait, you got hot chocolate in there, right?
This is Swiss Miss with some half and half, with a lot of half and half.
Ew.
It's so good.
I didn't know there was half and half in the hot chocolate. Okay.
Well, no, you add your own.
Okay.
It's so good. It's so creamy. It's nice. I'm a 10-year-old, basically.
I know what Ball would say. That he'd be like 10-hour poker sessions, and he'd be like, I gotta monitor how many cups of hot chocolate I have. Be like, what are you talking about? Like, is there too many? There is apparently too many.
I'm also my spirit animal on that. I picture Paul Spohr as a guy who's not afraid to just order like the fruitiest drink out to dinner and just own it. That's, I don't know. Paul, you can correct me if I'm wrong. That's what
umbrella drink guy?
I envision you as that sort of guy.
Absolutely accurate. Why not? If it tastes sweet. Great, I'm all about it, especially because I don't really drink alcohol anyway. So if it's just going to taste good, all the better. Yeah, I'm all about that. But I do respect your caffeine-free diet. I drink Red Bull by the gallon. It's terrible, but I love it.
Well, look, Paul does have a whole Twitch audience to acquiesce to. He's always, I mean, I feel like you're up on live streaming at all hours of the day. So you have a good excuse baked in for it. Anyway,
I'm high on the Prime energy drinks.
Prime, okay.
Yes. That's my new one. I used to be a Red Bull guy myself, Paul.
I'm a committed sugar-free Red Buller, but I've heard Prime is pretty tasty.
It's good. Well, I think the problem with a lot of energy drinks are the horrible aftertaste, like a lot of them have, and Prime doesn't have that at
all. Right. I'm a noted scarred from collegiate experiences on Red Bull guy. That's why, you know.
Yeah,
maybe mixed with some other stuff.
Yeah.
Happy June, by the way, Paul. We've gotten here a couple months now. It is wild here, and just kind of looking at the overall scene of Major League Baseball. As we always get that talk of, you know, regression, positive versus negative. Who were kind of like, if you just look, cause you do a lot of the fantasy, the DFS individually. Who are kind of your leaders right now, both to the positive and the negative? If we just look at this from a macro perspective, just the first couple names that pop into your head.
Well, I mean, somebody like Ranger Suarez is, you know, kind of pitching like the best pitcher in baseball right now. I don't quite think he's that. I'm never one to just invalidate a player's run as luck. I think that's really easy for some dweeb who plays fantasy baseball to you know, discount an amazing 74-inning run. Like, well, he's just lucky because of his BABIP being so low. Like, he is doing things to influence that BABIP there. I don't think everything is just happening around Ranger Suarez. He's pitching some of his best baseball. We've seen it before. The 106-inning run of 2021 was amazing as well, where he took advantage of a light schedule and pitched some of his best baseball. So he's been great, but 170 ERA, 080 whip, it's just not going to hold at that level. I would say the same for like a healthy Gerrit Cole or Corbin Burns. Most guys aren't going to hold that level. Those are your special seasons, your DeGroms, your Kershaws, your top tier guys can have them. I don't think that Ranger Suarez is going to necessarily have that. I think on the other end, unless it comes out that he's hurt, which at this point I'm starting to think that he is, but unless he comes out as just completely hurt and trying to play through it, there's no world where Corbin Carroll's this bad. Sophomore slump, I get that stuff happens. This is on another level, and I'm going to go to the BABIP again. And I don't just only rely on that, but it's telling with both these players. You know, Ranger Suarez running a really tight BABIP with the way he's been pitching. You keep the bases clean, it's easier to do good work. With Corbin Carroll, he's not able to flex the speed that he does have, even if the power is compromised, because the hits just aren't falling. 237 BABIP, almost 100 points lower than last year's 325. And he's the type of guy who can run something in the mid, in kind of the lower to mid threes there when he's going hot. So unless the shoulder is just completely destroyed and he is playing at like literally 75-80%, you got to think Corbin Carroll is going to be better too. So those are two guys, one on the high end, one on the low end, that jump out as me that have to change their performance as the season goes. One, just natural regression on Suarez, and the other, a return of a star, hopefully.
Two great names. Yeah, Carroll in Arizona, it's just been a struggle in general. It's like you take out Ketel Marte, and you're like, where is the offense coming out here for the
Absolutely.
Diamondbacks? Suarez, it's funny, too, you bring up the NL Cy Young, just because Suarez is third on that odds board right now at 5-1. Another guy with just sparkling numbers. You know, like with Shota Imanaga, you don't want to dismiss what he's doing because he's a veteran. He's pitched before overseas, comes to Chicago, and has been amazing so far. He's plus 350, your second favorite behind the Philly Zach Wheeler, who was outstanding again last night at plus 225. Imanaga's kind of in that same boat where, like, you watch the arsenal, right? Like, the stuff's there, and you can see where the success is coming. You can also acknowledge, sub-1 ERA, probably not likely for a full season.
Exactly. I mean, what Imanaga's been doing has been fantastic. He didn't quite get as much fanfare as Yamamoto coming over. And understandably, too, that's nothing against Imanaga, but he's coming over at age 30 as more of a mid-rotation type guy. Yamamoto's coming over to be an ace, so the expectation sets were different. Well, Imanaga's been pitching like an ace, and Yamamoto, since the blow-up in Korea, has been quite fantastic himself. With Imanaga, the biggest question was home runs, and we still haven't quite seen, you know, when Wrigley is at her worst and the wind's blowing out like crazy, how will he survive? He has a 7% homer to fly ball. And again, that's a number that I don't believe is necessarily sustainable, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily been lucky either. Because again, that dismisses the player a bit. But I do wonder, how well he can hold that, because he hasn't changed his fly ball profile. Imanaga still gives up 48% fly balls, which is a ton. Yep. The homers will eventually come, and that'll probably be the biggest regression for him. But I believe in the strikeouts, and I believe in the control. So even Imanaga's regression should be pretty strong. That said, guys like Suarez and Imanaga are not the types I go for in the Cy Young, because I'm trying to find the person that's going to build that summer narrative. If anything, as far as an award season goes, those two are probably peaking too early, because the narratives are a big part of it, whether they should be or not.
And you're buying very, very high on that price, as exactly. Well as Paul Spohr joins us at Spohr, writer for Fangraphs, joining us here on A Numbers Game. As we transition to the daily card, this also goes into sort of the regression talk. I feel like us fantasy nerds for multiple years now, we just keep banging the Patrick Sandoval drum of like, the stuff is so good. When is the regression going to turn? Again this year, over 5 ERA, but all the underlying numbers suggest he should be so much better. How about this, Paul? Tonight for the Angels, and I realize the Angels are just awful right now, but Sandoval is a home dog to somebody named Adam Mazur, who's making his major league debut tonight for the Padres, who had a 7.11 ERA in AAA. Yes. If this is not rock bottom for Sandoval with the market value, I don't really know what is.
Yeah, and he's so frustrating, and he kind of reminds you of another lefty who they just sent down in Reed Detmers. You can see no-hit stuff on any given night, and then other nights where a demotion to AAA looks viable. Like, I understand why Detmers was sent out. I think Sandoval's maybe put a few more innings on his ledger to avoid that fate, but it's still so frustrating, because this is a guy I've believed in for years now, but I'm just starting to realize that is the price of the inconsistency of his control, right? Is that he has tantalizing enough stuff to be a quality major leaguer. And in that, I mean, you know, like a fourth, fifth starter who can earn $12 million a year, eating up, you know, 150 innings. That's great. But I don't believe that there's necessarily going to be a turn with Sandoval. I've been projecting it for years, but this is just where his command is. Unless he links with somebody that really helps him up the level of where his command is, I think this is just going to be kind of who he is. That said, that means there's a lot of great starts, and I will be interested in trying to like pluck the interesting spots for him. You would think that he'd be a bigger dog favorite against somebody making their major league debut, but that speaks partly on him and partly on the Angels as a whole. I don't mind messing with him, but just go in eyes wide open anytime you go with Sandoval, that a bomb out is very possible.
No question on that. This Paul Spohr joins us right now. Any plays for you today, Paul? Anything that jumps out here on the card?
No, I haven't taken the full look at the card. I was looking more on the DFS front today, and there are a lot of interesting top pitchers going, depending on which field you're playing. But like, it's kind of a stud day. I love, you know, I'm somebody who's down to pay for like the Tyler Glasnow's of the world. I don't mind paying for that premium pitching. Obviously depends on the kind of contest that you're playing, but you got Glasnow, Burns, Kirby, the aforementioned Imanaga, Max Fried, Luis Gil, Cutter Crawford, Jared Jones, and Jack Flaherty all pitching today. All those guys have been fantastic. So I'm probably paying up for pitching. If you are trying to pivot and get really cute with it, you might look at like a Mitch Spence against those Mariners that are striking out like crazy. David Peterson against a game Nats team. They've been a frisky little bunch, but still not a team that I'm terribly afraid of. So David Peterson, Mitch Spence might be some guys I pivot to if I'm trying to get in cheap on pitching, or even Sandoval, because he'll give you some upshot, but just know that he can give you a negative -5 as well.
Now, that is always possible in the cards. Ryan Pepiot was the other guy, at least I had targeted for today. Against Miami, too, on the road. Can't get enough of some Pepiot there in the Rays today. Yeah, what an outstanding pitching matchup. Glasnow for the Dodgers, Jared Jones for the Pirates. That'll be a lot of fun. Total there of 7.5 or 8, depending on where you shop. He's Paul Spohr. Follow him at Spohr. I always learn so much whenever we have you on, Paul. So appreciate the time as always, man. Be well.
Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
We have one more segment to get to, Kelly. College baseball super regionals. Prices are now out for all 8 supers matchups. We'll talk about our early thoughts on those as the market starts to mature, and wrap up the show with our best bets right after this.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back to the final time on A Numbers Game, where we remind you that you can sound the trumpets. It's horse racing time. Saddle up for action with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when you use promo code VSINHORSE. That's all one word. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Wager on your favorite horses and watch the races live right in the app. Download the DK Horse app right now. I was sort of distracted, Kelly, because I was going down this rabbit hole after a tweet we got from Brian here. He goes, I know parlay is a dirty word, but barring injury, am I crazy for wanting a gold medal Olympic parlay of Djokovic to win the men's Olympics, Swiatek to win the women's Olympics, and then Scheffler and Korda in both the golf. And I'm diving in now to the I've just quickly
trying to see what the price is.
No, not that. I just quickly pulling up 2018 Ryder Cup because that was at Le Golf National, which is where they're going to play the Olympic golf. So I'm going back, like refreshing my memory here. Some of the like when McIlroy and Thorbjørn Olesen just pounded DJ and Ricky 4-2.
So where does that fall on the PGA Tour scale? Okay, now you're making me go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, I know. Interesting. You know who led the U.S. in points that 2018 Ryder Cup at the venue they'll play the Olympic golf at? Who went 4-1 in five matches? One Justin Thomas.
Okay. So, hey, I'm actually surprised at how many questions I've gotten about.
If you're wondering who led every, this would be a long shot. If you want to know who led every. All Ryder Cup golfers that year in points, it was the great Francesco Molinari. Went 5-0 that year.
Oh yeah, I actually do.
Fleetwood went 4-1 for 4 points. So that could be popular.
Olympics will be 2 weeks after the Open. It's played.
It is August 1st through the 4th. So the men's goes first, then the women's goes second.
Oh, okay.
The 7th through the 10th. Yeah, and it's the top 60. I was just reading an article. There's all this, the whole individual qualification patterns here. It's the top 60, and who knows now especially on the men's side, the qualification process that goes in. Because this is our first Olympic golf. I mean, we've only had a couple Olympic golf events, but the first one now, of course,
two.
What is Justin Rose won right in Brazil?
And Schauffele, right?
And then Schauffele in Japan. Yeah, in that insane like 9-way playoff. Which was awesome.
It was amazing. He got so little credit for that. I know it's not a major, and majors are always going to be on their own, but it's just amazing.
That was a really fun tournament.
It was a really fun tournament. Yeah. It's amazing how much we've talked about Schauffele over the years, and it just like kind of dismissed that win as a win.
Just forget an Olympics. Yeah. It's sort of like how, same deal with the tennis stuff. Like the random winners, like Monica Puig winning an Olympics. Mm-hmm. She doesn't get any credit for that. Just because it's an Olympics, it's not a Grand Slam. But anyway, that's August 1st is when the men start there at Le Golf National. That's a good question from Brian.
I'm surprised how much interest there's. I've gotten a fair amount of questions about Olympics golf. I think Ben just gave you a better breakdown than we haven't touched down in really much at all.
Like 30-second Wikipedia, exactly, yeah. Looking up the 2018 Ryder Cup.
Yeah, well, that's where you would start. I mean, you're playing the same course. I think that is extremely important to take a peek at that. On my bets to make a to-do list, Ben, I will say Xander Schauffele top 10 this week is something I will be adding. We did get a couple shops that finally posted in town. I think I got to wait for a couple more because these the prices have adjusted finally on Xander Schauffele top 10.
They have adjusted.
I think he's only like -110 at DraftKings, but keep in mind that's a dead heat shop. Here in town, the best I could find non-dead heat was -145. So I haven't had to go past even money so far on him this year. So that was might be tough, but I'll probably still be betting that. And then how about a horse bet already for this weekend? We did the read at the beginning. I bet Sierra Leone.
You did bet Sierra Leone?
Surfing just posted. I got him 2-1.
Nice. Sierra Leone, final leg of the Triple Crown this weekend. Belmont Stakes from Saratoga.
I'm going to say first time ever in my life that I bet a horse on opening odds at a fixed odds shop too. I mean, not that I've seriously been anywhere else, but yeah.
Right.
I'm in already.
Also, I'm doing some, at least just looking at DraftKings, I don't see anything, no Olympics odds up yet. So, got to wait. But
oh, yeah, good point.
I'm going to file that away. JT, if JT's form, is there a long shot?
Man, he's been up and down this year.
Yeah, he has been very, very up and down. It's like, ask us in 6 weeks where JT is at.
I mean, there have been times where he has looked great this year, and there are times he has looked absolutely like he's lost his game. So, I don't even know where to say he's at.
As we close the show here, we're waiting for DraftKings to post these, but MGM has posted, a couple other shops have.
We got futures up.
We do have futures at DraftKings now for the final 8 teams. We can show those. Tennessee is your favorite, and the reason why, they were already a top 2 power rated team coming in. They host the 1-4 seed who advanced to Super Regionals. So to refresh your Super Regionals, it is best 2 of 3 now. It is hosted by the higher seeds who've gone through their own regional here. So Tennessee is the number one overall seed. They are 3-1 favorites to win it all. They get Evansville, and I'm seeing Tennessee. I joked earlier.
Wait, how many teams left, Ben?
Eight teams. Or six, sorry, 16 teams. It's eight super regions.
Right, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So we're down to the final eight supers, yeah.
And then we'll be eight teams once we go to College World Series.
Eight make it to Omaha, okay. Yeah, for the College World Series. I was joking with you earlier on. You want to lay -750 with Tennessee to beat Evansville? And you're like, no. And then I look at the odds. It's actually -1,000. So it's even higher than I thought. Evansville +525. Texas A&M, your second choice right now, +310. They are a $5 favorite against Oregon. Who is +325. Oregon was the 3 seed to come out of the Santa Barbara Regional. So we had a bunch of teams who came out that were 3 seeds. UConn is +260 against your Florida State Seminoles, who are the 3rd betting favorite.
That's
Florida
right.
State, big favorites. They host -375. So that's why Florida State, A&M, and Tennessee, they get all seeds who are 3rd or lower in their respective regional now coming to their ballpark getting to host. So that is part of why the odds are so short there.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It's
a relatively easy draw.
Exactly.
Though,
they do get a pretty simple draw. The one that stands out to me so far.
Does this really shake things up, Ben? Because, I mean, you're talking, add that on with the teams that have already been knocked out, right, that you were expecting to make it this far.
Yeah.
Man, this futures board's really shifting.
I mean, folks. 5 of the top 10 preseason teams have already been knocked out. I mean, Wake Forest was preseason number 1. Arkansas goes down. They lose in their own regional. Vanderbilt was 2 and out. Bunch of teams that just did not show up at all in regionals that are now done. So the one that stands out, and we're again waiting for more odds to populate here, but they are going to be an underdog price. I've seen them in the 2 books I've shopped here as high as +1, just updating this, Kelly, +162. Is the team that was the runner-up last year, the Florida Gators, who were, by all accounts,
Gators,
awful.
Boo.
They were all, I'm sorry, and they unfortunately knocked out Kelly's Oklahoma State Cowboys yesterday. Florida was awful. They were 28-27. We don't know, NCAA baseball does not do the whole last four in thing like the committee does
right,
for
right.
college basketball, but they were definitely in the last four in. They might have been the last team in. You go 28-27 in baseball, in college baseball, you usually don't make the postseason, but they had the number one strength of schedule. You play in the SEC. You have pedigree. You have arguably one of the most dynamic two-way players in the sport right now in Jack Caglione. And this is a group that limps their way into regionals. They had a 6.28 team ERA, which was 58th out of the 64 teams that made the tournament. Shout out to our friends at College Baseball Insiders who put together all the advanced stats on this. Our guy Matt Grissom and
awesome website. And, Matt will be on others. With us tomorrow.
Matt on with us tomorrow. So Florida barely gets in, but then they win the regional, and now they're taking on Clemson here, who has been very, very good. They just snapped a 14-year drought getting to supers, but like 2 of their 3 wins were by a single run. And their leading pitcher here, who's been awesome, is a freshman in Aiden Knack. And I just wonder, in a super regional format against a super battle-tested team who is getting hot at the right time and whose bats have really started to heat up in Florida, how Knack is going to fare in a moment that is on another level than anything he's experienced so far, at least starting out this best. You assume he'll start the first game of the 2-of-3 series here for Knack and Clemson. The other element of this, so Florida, I mentioned how they had a really bad team ERA, over 6, but the advanced stats say they really should have had fared better than they actually did. It was an expected fielding independent pitching of .481 compared to a 6.28 ERA. So there was always some positive regression here baked in for Florida. We just didn't see it. And I get the guys who've watched college baseball all year are going to say, look, this team is not any good. They have Caglione. And it's just a bunch of randos. But
that guy was batting in the 3-hole yesterday. Played in like 3 games this season.
Yes, Florida, it's been a very random year. They beat Oklahoma State yesterday with 3 relievers. Like, it was a bullpen game. When I see that and I see pedigree, I naturally think back to teams in a conference like the SEC, which is the best conference in college baseball, that have done this before. I mean, it reminds me a lot of what, not necessarily to the high degree, but what Ole Miss did a few years ago. It was 100-1 coming into the postseason. Arguably shouldn't have even gotten in, but they did. They had pedigree. They had talent. They made a deep run. Florida has all those same metrics and at least benchmark-type things they've done in the past.
Great coach. Not sure how much that matters.
Really good coach, Kevin O'Sullivan, a former Clemson assistant, by the way, going back to Clemson. where they go on the road there. They've made supers 10 of his 17 years now. That is a dog, depending on price, I'm going to be very interested in. Again, the longest I see is plus 162. But Florida, to me, that's the one team, Kelly, I've identified here for the
Supers. Makes sense. Bats getting hot at the right time, right? That's what it was very apparent the last couple games I watched.
This has been a blast, Kelly, as always, with you. We've done all we can do. If you're listening on radio, Gojo and Golic is next. If you're watching here on VSiN, Best Bets is next, right after this.